Welcome to Because I Want to Know, the podcast where I interview guests about their crazy, unique occupations or life experiences. I'm your host, Leslie Fear. So let's get into it, shall we? Hey, everyone. Today, I'm joined with Portia Lauder. She was sentenced 10 years ago to federal prison, and she's here to tell her story. Portia, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
I was mesmerized by your videos on TikTok, I have to say, and I could not believe my ears when I was hearing all the things that happened to you in prison, and not everything was bad, not everything was great. So I know this was based on real estate fraud. Can you kind of give me a quick synopsis of that and then what led to prison, and then we'll keep talking?
Yes. So I don't know how familiar your listeners will be to the kind of the boom, the 2005 to 2008 real estate boom and then market crash, but I was involved in all of that.
Okay.
My background was photography. That's what I spent my younger years doing. My mom was a photographer. It's just what I grew up doing.
Okay.
And in 2004, I live in Utah, and the market just really started to move.
Okay.
About that time, my business had grown to the point where I needed to either move out of my home, I was working out of my home, or build a new home with a studio in it. So I purchased a lot,
Yeah. And
we started building a home. The lots that were behind the home that I was building were moving pretty fast. And I told my husband, I'm going to go put one of those under contract. Like, the market's going up so fast.
Yeah.
And a lot of my neighbors were doing that and kind of flipping, you know, to make some money. And so I put a lot under contract. I remember I put down $2,500 earnest money, and my husband just had a total flip. He's like, what are you? That's so risky. And so I ran back and said, let me have the money back. Well, those lots like doubled in value. I was so mad.
Oh, wow.
I was like, you know, in a few months, I could have just made a really good turn on that.
Sure.
And after that, I just jumped in and started buying lots, putting lots under contract, finding people to buy them from me. And there's nothing illegal in doing that.
Sure.
I remember making $30,000, which was like how much I made working for, you know, months as a photographer. And so I just started buying more and flipping them. But I really didn't know what I was doing. And I quickly got in over my head.
Yeah.
I put several lots under contract and then tried to get construction loans for them. And I had a high interest rate at the time. And so I was just sinking. And then I heard about these, they were called equity deals, where people can purchase a home. They pull the equity out with a high appraisal. So you go get a high appraisal, send it over to the bank and say, I want to borrow this much money. And at the time, it was pretty popular, at least in Utah.
Yeah.
It also happens to be illegal, at least the way that I got involved in it. And,
okay. And
I can clearly see now, like I went from jumping in and it was initially, you know, kind of a gray area, but over time it became much more clear to me that what I was doing was illegal. So,
right. Yeah. And it's so funny you say this, because we have a little real estate, my husband and I, background ourselves, because we have a few rental properties. So when you sell one, the capital gains alone, it will kill you. So I can only imagine you getting over your head so fast. So you're doing things that are kind of under the table here. And I know this is the time back in 2008 when they were bailing out banks, but they were not giving you guys any kind of leeway here, were they?
No. That was the big struggle for me. I was like, wait a second.
Yeah.
I'm a mother with five kids and I just got in over my head. What about the banks? But you know, what I've learned is that I was involved. What I did was wrong. Mm. And my price to pay is my price to pay. The banks, in my opinion, were as culpable as I was.
And, oh, I agree.
But that's not the way the government saw it. So, and there's nothing I can do about that.
Right.
So I just had to accept that and move on. But
it
was hard.
So what happened was the FBI got involved, came to your house, spoke to you and your husband. You kind of combated it a little bit, going, you know, what am I doing here? I'm not a criminal, blah, blah, blah. And I think you said in one of your videos that you just really refused to accept it. And did that make it harder on you for the actual sentencing part?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I handled it as bad as I could. I mean, I was terrified, you know, like on every level in my mind, I'm thinking, how do you recover?
Yeah.
Like, if you go to prison, I mean, it felt like death to me. I would be leaving my children, my husband, but not just that. Like, how do you socially recover? I mean, I had no involvement in the justice system. So it just seemed like such a big, impossible experience for me to have.
Yeah.
And I just kept denying it and arguing. And I really spent every dime we had, all of our retirement, everything fighting it, which not only did it just destroy us financially, but it also made everybody mad. So, yeah.
Well, you know, of course it's going to affect your family. Of course they're going to maybe lose some trust in you. And through this whole thing, and before we even start telling the story about you going actually to prison, I have to commend your husband and even your family for sticking by you for the 5 years you did serve.
Yes. Yeah. My husband, I think, is a hero in the story, and my children as well. They're pretty incredible.
Yeah. So. That's amazing. So FBI gets involved. You're convicted to 7 years and you serve a 5-year term, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So tell me about the first day, because I know you were like low risk. So they were like just trusting you to drive up to the prison and your husband to drop you off. It was just no big deal. I mean, to me, that was like, what?
Right. Yeah. You know, and I didn't realize how different my experience was than many others until I got to prison. But I was low risk. Yeah. However, I was sentenced in a high security federal prison. So I didn't know what to expect. Yeah. I was devastated, of course. I was fortunate because the judge gave me 8 weeks to say goodbye to my family. So the day that I was sentenced, I think the courtroom experience is such a shock. And I've talked to, you know, numerous people that I did time with that were just like, there's nothing like that experience. I've talked to like really tough, rugged women that said that they curled up in a ball and sobbed like a baby after they were sentenced. It's such a lonely feeling to stand there, especially when it's the United States of America versus Portia Lauder. It's just like my whole country is against me, you know. It's daunting. So that day, the judge gave me the maximum sentence. I was facing 0 to 7 years. He did give me 8 weeks to self-surrender. And, you know, I just remember looking at my children and thinking, how are we going to do this?
Yeah.
How are we going to get through this, you know? Up until that point, I assumed my husband would leave. Like, I couldn't imagine how he would stay. But that day, he stood up in the courtroom and he pled with the judge. He said, please give her time to say goodbye to our family, which was so tender.
Yes.
And I knew, I was like, okay, we can do this together, you know?
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, like I said, that's incredible. And kudos to your husband. So he drives you the first day you get there. Now, you're in this maximum security. Was it just a glitch or did they mean to do that? Was it a mistake?
It's a combination of things. So they put a management variable on me. And part of that, there's a few different reasons that they did that. And I won't go into all the details. Okay. And in the end, it actually worked in my favor. I really liked the higher security prison, but I was mad in the beginning. I didn't really know what to expect from a camp versus a higher security prison. But what happened was, my husband drove me, and it's 14 hours from where we live. And I walked into this higher security prison.
Yeah.
I actually thought until I got there, I was going to a camp, because at that prison, they had a camp and they had the high security. And I was like, I'm at the wrong place. Yeah. You guys made a mistake, you know?
Right?
But they said, no, you're at the right place. I mean, that was the address they gave us. So yeah, I walked in. Now, people will say, why didn't you leave? You had 8 weeks. Why didn't you leave the country?
Yeah.
You know, I had 5 children and I was married. Like, where am I going to go? I wasn't going to run for the rest of my life.
Oh, right.
I didn't have, you know, I mean, I guess I can see the point it wasn't even an option for me to run. And that's why they let me self-surrender, because I wasn't a flight risk.
Right.
I wasn't a danger to myself or others. And so, you know, when I walked in, I remember immediately thinking, what just happened? Like, it is a very cold and different experience. You know, everything's cinder block. There's no color. Everyone on that compound wore khakis. So, and nobody looked very happy to see me. It wasn't I got a big welcome, you know?
Yeah.
And so they strip search you and then they assign you to a bunk. And I was devastated, just completely broken-hearted.
I cannot imagine, Portia, you walking into this maximum security as unflight risk as you are. And you're like, what? Okay, so first of all, I got screwed around by all the banks and now I get screwed around by the government. What could get worse? Can it get worse? Right?
Yeah. Oh, I was so brokenhearted and angry and upset. And not just that, but I could not see how I was going to serve a week. I couldn't imagine how I was going to do a week without my children, without my community, just everything.
Yeah.
And I had 7 years in front of me. It just seemed impossible.
Ugh. Right. So you get this bunk. I know there's like protocol. I've interviewed other people that have gone to prison. I actually interviewed a guy who preps people for prison because he went to federal prison on drug charges. So now he says, this is what you can expect. This is what you can expect this way, or these are the papers you do, or this is what you do in prison to get out earlier, or whatever it is.
Right.
So, and that may be kind of what you do, and we'll talk about that later. So when you get there, you're just in this bunk. You got these khaki clothes on. No one likes you. No one's nice. What happens?
Well, you know, what surprised me was that I didn't get out of my bunk. I just laid there like thinking I can't see my way out of this. I'm not leaving. I'm not going to go eat. I was just physically and emotionally sick.
Yeah.
And right away you have a bunkie, like, or a cellmate, somebody that, you know, is in your area.
Yeah.
And my bunkie kept saying, you have to leave. You have to go get something to eat. They're going to put you in a suicide cell, which is much worse. Like, she could see how physically sick I was. And I said, please just go away. People say, were you scared? I'm like, oh no. Scared was like a way, I would have had to climb a ladder to get scared. Like, I was so brokenhearted. I was way below scared.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's like, what's someone going to do to me that I don't care what they do to me. I'm so brokenhearted. I just don't even how I'm going to do this. But she kept saying, you've got to go eat. And she'd bring me like an apple. You've got to have something to eat or drink some water, do something.
Yeah.
Which was really sweet. Like, when you think about it, you know, and so I finally got the courage to go sit out in the day room. And, you know, there's individual cells and then there's like a big open room and they keep you locked in there. And so I walk out to the day room and I sit there and I'm literally crying so hard I can hardly breathe. I'm like, like, oh, I just can't even, all I can see is my sweet little girl's face. She was 7 years old at the time. And I'm thinking, 7 years without, that's as long as she's been alive. I can't do this. It just, it was so overwhelming. And there was a gal sitting there next to me. I don't even know her name. Her name was Bubbles. That's what everyone has a nickname in prison. So.
Right.
Bubbles. <Yeah. laughs> Sweet little Bubbles. She would just look over at me every so often, about every 15 minutes, and go, it's okay, baby. Just keep breathing. This will go away. It'll get better, I promise. And then she'd watch TV. It's okay. You'll be all right. I was like, wow, I can't believe I sat there for probably hours just crying. And she'd just look over every now and then and say, just keep breathing. It'll get better. You know, so it was kind. It was kind. Even though everyone else had their own pain, they would still show compassion, which was surprising.
Right.
So.
Well, you know, and she knows you got to get it out. It sounds like they kind of just let you ride it out.
No? Yeah. Yep.
Oh, tell me about, like, everybody has their own shower and everybody has their own bunk, as we know. Everybody has their own place at the lunch table or dinner table or wherever it is, right? I mean,
right. Well, yes. Those are the prison rules that you don't know. We call them prison house rules. So, you come in and people have certain times that they do everything because, you know, it's very small. You don't have a lot of space. Like, there's three or four people in a room that's the size of a closet with two bunks.
Wow.
And you can barely walk between the two bunks. And so you've got to learn how to manage your time. And the way that that works, people just get really structured. So I use this shower at 5 a.m. Well, you don't know that when you first come in. So you just get up and use the shower until somebody says, hey, you're in my shower. Or why are you sitting there? That's where I sit, you know?
Yeah.
And so then you're like, oh, okay. Like, you start to navigate and learn quickly that there's certain places that you don't want to go. The TV room, there's contention. People are going to fight over that. The laundry room, you better know how to do your laundry and do it in your time slot. Because if you leave it sitting there long enough, and somebody else is, it's their turn, they're going to get real mad about that. So you just, you learn all these prison house rules to survive.
It's funny because there's like no itinerary. It's not like Sheldon's handing you the schedule of the day, right? You know, the bathroom schedule or whatever. I mean, and I'm not trying to make light of this. I know it was very serious for you at the time.
It's also, I mean, at a certain point you get to a place where you just, it's entertaining. Like, it really is. You're like, yes, it's painful, but still, is this really happening? Is this really what we're going to do? You know?
I know. So you finally get the hang of things. Cause as I said, no one tells you anything. It's just like, okay, bye-bye. Have a nice 5 years or 7 years. So you do develop friendships and relationships with some of these women, because of course they're initially trying to give you some solace, trying to give you a little help, whatever, being endearing to you. So tell me about the friends you made.
Yeah. So you go through this really difficult experience and you build relationships, like, unbelievable to me, the connections that I built in time. Like, I met people and it was so surprising because I had always just thought, well, prison, you know, everyone in prison's bad. That's why I can't go. Like, I can't go, you know?
Right.
And that wasn't the case at all. I remember right out the gate when I got there, I was nervous to try to go find a laundry spot, and this woman that's like 6 foot tall walks up and she's like, what's going on? And I go, I don't know. She's like, I go, I gotta find a laundry spot because you have to go sign up and all the girls are lined up in priority and I'm in the background just watching them going, I don't even dare get in there. And she's like, well, come on, baby girl, let's go get you a laundry spot. And she just walked up to the front of the line and said, hey, this is poor. She's new here. You better give her a good laundry spot. And it was immediately everybody just started, you know, I was really surprised right out the gate how supportive people were.
Yeah.
And in time, I became that person. Like somebody would come in and I would think, oh, they need support. I'll run over and get them a granola bar and a soda or anything I can do to make them feel a little bit better their first day,
right.
You know?
Yeah. And I know that you're assigned. Are you assigned certain jobs? Because I know at one point, did I? Oh yeah.
The job thing is a serious thing. You better know this when you get to prison, because not that your listeners are going to go, but if they do, they should know. You don't want them to assign you a job. You want to go to the counselor and tell them. Same with your, like, you're going to be put in orientation right out the gate, and then they're going to find a room for you. If you find someone that you connect with, go to the counselor and see if they can move you into that room.
Wow.
And when it comes to the job, you know, the counselor calls me in and he goes, all right, you work in the kitchen. And I was like, well, do I have to have that job? And he goes, that's the job I'm assigning you to. You know, if you wanted a different job, you should have found it. And I was like, nobody told me that, I get to the kitchen and it's like my first day, the officer starts yelling at me because I gave someone too much carrot. She's like, what the hell's wrong with you? I go, oh, I don't know. She goes, why did you give her so many carrots? I go, she asked for them. And she goes, get off the line, you smart A. And I'm like, the girl next to me says, oh, you have to tell her off when she talks to you like that. I go, I don't know the rules. I'm not going to talk to her like that. So after that, I would go work that job because I'm up at 5 a.m. They give you these clunky steel tote boots. You have to walk up to the kitchen and then they scream at you. And I thought, I don't like this job. I'm going to find a different job, you know? So I went and worked in education until they hired me. I just volunteered and then they said, oh, yeah, we'll give you a job here.
Nice.
That was better.
That's
so
nice that you can get paid to do things. But when you were working in the kitchen, let's go back to the food. Did you prepare it or did you just serve it? And how was it? How was the food?
Well, the food is not good.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't really care for it. There are a few things you can buy on commissary that make things a little bit better. But yeah, we didn't prepare it. I think that there were cooks that went in at like 3 a.m. to prepare it. It's always the same. So like Monday, taco day, Tuesday, hamburger day, Wednesday, fish day. And I really didn't care too much for the food.
Oh, really? So, yeah. Well, it's probably not good quality and I don't know how they prepare it. So, and I love to cook. So I'll be like, oh, I'd probably work in the kitchens. And you're like, no, you get yelled at and it's not fun.
It's not like that. Yeah. Well, if you love to cook, you're going to learn how to make things with commissary items. And that is like unbelievable what people can do with just a few things. Like I perfected the prison cake and I learned how to make that. I mean, no, for real, I was teaching lessons on that. If you like to cook, you're going to take a few items on commissary and you're going to repurpose them until you come up with a really cool recipe. And then everybody's going to come and learn how to make that from you. So that's the way it works. But yeah, the kitchen is not my favorite. So.
Right. Well, how were you making the cakes? Were you making them like in a microwave or something?
Yeah. So the way it worked was the things that I purchased on commissary and I tried different combinations.
Yeah.
They sell cookies kind of like they're no name brand, but they're like Oreo cookies.
Yeah.
And so if you take a pack of cookies and you break it into, you just break them apart and put them into a Tupperware bowl because that's all we had was Tupperware.
Right.
You take 1 cup of pudding, 1 cup of milk, let's see, 1/2 can of soda. This sounds crazy, but then you cook it in the microwave for 9 minutes. It actually raises into a really cool cake.
Mm.
And it's the soda and the soda in the cookies. It just cooks right up. And so I actually did a video on that. It's on YouTube.
Are you serious?
I did. No, it's a really, I did it recently. I had an event that I had to go to and I taught everybody how to make prison cakes and they were blown away that you could take these little items and make such a nice cake. And it, you know, you're in prison. So cake isn't something that you get. So everyone was just so excited about that.
Well, of course they were. It was something not fish. Okay. Or tacos. I mean,
and the fish, when prison fish is just, I never did eat that fish. Don't eat the prison fish.
Right,
so.
And I don't know how you can screw up tacos, but apparently you can.
You can. Yeah, you can. You can.
Okay, so you learned how to do a lot of things, and thank goodness you've picked it up pretty fast, because I'm not so sure everybody would have. And I know you kind of got over being scared, but like, Were you able to have visitors? Were you able to call people? Tell me more about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so, I mean, visitors, yes, but I'm 14 hours away from my family. So it took 4 months before we even had our first visit. And I had no idea what I was going to face. You know, I thought, oh, my family's here. Like, I was so excited, I could hardly breathe.
Right.
And then one of my coworkers, she looks at me and she goes, you need to know what you're facing here. This is your first visit. I know you're excited. It's going to hurt like you can't believe when they leave. And I'm thinking, yeah. No, there's not even words to describe that kind of pain.
Wow.
You know, I remember they came Friday afternoon. So we spent Friday afternoon, all day Saturday and all day Sunday.
Mm.
And while they're there, you know, I feel like myself again. I feel just so connected to my kids. We're talking and they're hurting and I'm hurting.
Sure.
And we're just connecting. And then at the end of the visit, they buzz this buzzer and they say, inmates to the left, families to the right. And I watched my husband, my 7-year-old walk away and my little girl started to cry.
Oh.
And my heart sank. I thought, I'm going to throw up. I looked over and Chad's crying. And I started playing this little sign language game to try just to keep her mind off of it.
Yeah.
And then they walked out. And I can't describe the level of despair I felt. I waited an hour to be strip searched, got back to my bunk, and I just laid in my bunk and sobbed like I've never sobbed, just physically sick.
Oh.
And I can't even tell you. I've talked to other people that have said I never had a visit again after the first. Like, it hurts so much to have them for a minute. Because, you know, 4 months I had started to acclimate. I started to not really accept the amount of time, but just get through the day.
Yes.
And then they show up and leave. And I just thought, I can't ever be okay again. It was so painful.
It was like going back to the beginning again, probably for you.
I think it was worse. Like, I think that the PTSD of the beginning was really hard, but like I couldn't even breathe for like 2 weeks. I couldn't talk.
Oh.
I was so heartbroken. And luckily after that, it was quite a while before I saw them again. And then it was about once a year. Like it really wasn't, I did not get regular visits from my family. Phone calls were, you only get 300 minutes a month. So I had it worked out to 4 15-minute phone calls a week. Like that's how often I talk to my family.
Wow. Now, were you sending letters too and correspondence cards? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So that was one of the things I did that got me in trouble was that because I'm stubborn. And so I thought, oh, yeah, you do what you're going to do. I'm going to do what I'm going to do. So I started blogging and writing about the prison and emailing it home to my husband. And then he'd post it on a blog online.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah. They hated that. So I got shipped for that. But
I remember one of your videos you were talking about there's a lot of corruption within the prison system.
Yeah. So my counselor has been indicted now for sexual misconduct with inmates. And
wow.
Yeah. So that, I mean, and it's sad because you have a lot of Hispanic girls that are going to get deported that don't even speak English. And so they get taken advantage of. And it was,
course.
I wasn't, you know, nobody's going to take advantage of me because that's not going to happen.
Right.
So, you know, I'm like, good luck.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen. But I mean, if I was a girl that had no family, that couldn't even speak the language, and the officer calls her into his office several times, and then he's having her help him take the trash out and other things, it's like, so that stuff does go on. In fact, that prison has now been shut down because there was so much, I think the warden and some of the officers. Yeah. They shut that prison down.
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, as is everywhere, there's corruption. We know that it's everywhere, even when you're not in prison. But I can only imagine because, you know, how scared for someone who doesn't speak the language and someone who's scared to death already in an American prison when they're not from here. I can only imagine.
I put myself, if I'm in a prison in Mexico and I don't speak Spanish and the warden's calling me in and saying, hey, I need you to strip down so I can take pictures of you. I mean, what do you do? It's terrifying.
Well, you get strip searched when you come in. So, I mean, your dignity is already gone. Every time you probably visit your family, you get strip searched again. So, I mean, but I have to ask you, and this may be too personal. If it is, let me know. How did this affect you spiritually? I don't know if you were a believer in God or not or whatever, but tell me, did it affect you in a good way and in a different way? Did you not expect what happened?
So I think I was a believer before I went.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing about it, everyone's a believer in prison because we have nothing.
I
mean, we don't all believe in the same God. We don't all, you know what I mean? But
sure.
we, it's our only hope. And so, you know, when I got to prison, that first 3 days, I remember getting on my knees and I'm sitting in a cell with a prison uniform. And I reached out and said, I just need to know who I am. I feel so broken. I am in the deepest hole. I can't see my way out of this. And I've never felt so loved and valued. I felt this incredible confirmation that even in my weakest state, I had a purpose on this earth. And that was a defining moment for me, because I recognize now, when you know who you are and why you're on this earth, you can do really hard things.
Yes. Yes.
And so my faith grew. I always say God walks through the prison halls. I mean, I would sit outside for hours in tears. And for me, nature is a strong spiritual connection. I feel very connected. So every chance I got, I would go out in the morning and watch the sun come up and just feel this incredible amount of love. You're separated from everything, all color, all. So when you start to notice things that, at least I did, that I didn't notice out here, that I was just like the majesty of God's creation. So for me, it was a very spiritual experience to go to prison.
Yeah. You know, and I interview near-death experiencers. I told you that before I started recording. And, you know, not all of them are believers. Some become believers. It changes them. And the reason I bring this up is because I can't believe how it changes someone, because they see things in a totally different way when they come back. Because in their minds, the other side's more real than here. And
I love to. So last year, my brother passed away, and I have felt this connection to. I've watched a lot of near death experience videos, and I'm going to have to listen to some of your podcasts because for me, there's so much to look forward to, you know, and I absolutely feel that connection. I'm excited. I keep saying, I'm looking forward to what comes next. So.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to go anytime soon, but what they say is when they passed, they look down at their bodies and they're like, it was like taking off this disgusting meat suit. Right. And they're like, I don't want to put that back on. I don't want to, you know. So, and they had no regard for it. It was just a vehicle in which to get to a point A to point B. So, and also they appreciated, you know, being able to come back and tell the story. And a lot of people are like, oh, well, it's your brain. It's, yeah, your brain does change. There are chemicals in your brains that do change. But when they all say the same things over and over, and they all have different experiences, you know, I interviewed a woman who went to hell, and she was a good Catholic girl. I mean, because it was her indoctrination. And I'm not a religious person. I'm very spiritual. That's very cliche to say, but it's just the truth. It's the best way to describe me.
I feel that prison was a near-death experience. Like it was a death of my old self. It was a death of my ego, of who I thought I was. I mean, you figure prior to prison, I have all these roles and titles. I walk into a prison, we all wear the same color. We're all there because we made a mistake. We're all on equal ground.
Wow.
And, you know, for me, it was like, now I realize how foolish I was. Like, when we die, we won't take any financial things or titles with us. We won't, you know, it's the tender experiences. It's the connections. It's the support we offer someone in the moment. It's the way we see each other. And I got that from prison. Like, I came home, I wore the same clothes for 3 years because I thought it worked really well for me in prison not to care about my appearance, you know? And so I really resonate with those experiences, because I think in some ways I experienced that as well.
That is so profound, Portia, to say that, because I get it. And I also think, and you may or may not believe this, but I do believe this because so many of them told me this, that we do plan some of the things that we go through. And
girl, I know I plan to go to prison, and this sounds so weird, but before I came to Earth, because I was, okay, so 2.5 years in, and I haven't even shared this on TikTok, but 2.5 years in, I remember I'm sitting in Minnesota in a prison, and I go to bed late one night, and normally, you know, the only person that I can really pour my heart out to is my creator. So this night, though, I'm too tired to have the long conversation. So I just say, hey, I'm really tired. And I remember that night thinking, you know, I'm so far away from my family. I just felt like this is where I am now. Yeah. I don't know. I can't see it anymore, where I'm going to be or what. And I had this dream. And that night I dreamed that I was in a room with a whole bunch of other people. Oh. And there was a person in the front of the room that was just this really vibrant, awesome person.
Yeah.
And we were in a classroom kind of preparing. And I kept raising my hand saying, but what about this? But what, which is so mean. Like, I'm just, I want to know.
Yeah.
And the instructor said, you won't know until you get there. No matter how you prepare, you won't know because you won't have experience. You won't know what it feels like until you get there.
Yes.
And then the instructor walked by and whispered in my ear, I'm going to marry you someday. And aww. I woke up right then. And I remember feeling this incredible amount of joy. And I couldn't figure out, I called my husband. I said, boy, I don't know if I'm going to marry someone else, but there's this guy in my dream that made me so happy. He's like, okay. But then I'm sitting in the rec yard and I'm just pondering for like 2 weeks. I'd go sit outside and I think, what did that mean? And I'd think about it because it made me so happy. And all of a sudden I realized that was my husband. I didn't even recognize him because he was so vibrant and incredible. Like, oh, wow. We don't really see each other as we are. And then I remembered I was preparing for this experience. Like, I knew I was coming to prison. I was born to do this, you know? Yeah. And it was just, yeah.
Because wow. I do think that because you did and you went through what you did, you're able, and we can talk about this now, your coaching business, because you're able to, the mental health coaching you do. And so tell me more about that.
Yeah. Who knew? My husband and I will just laugh because I went to prison when I was 43. So okay. Just imagine, like, I could not see how I was going to come out. And I mean, I'm not going to ever be involved in real estate, right? I know that. Right? I was on the 10 o'clock news. I don't know that anyone will want me to come take their wedding pictures when I get home. I mean, it just, right? it seems, I don't know who I am anymore. So yeah. I just started to work on that soul stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
And I had no idea I would come home. And I've written 2 books.
Nice.
I do coaching. I had someone reach out to me and say, hey, we want you to come in and coach our mental health clients. So I started yeah. facilitating these group sessions with kids that are struggling with mental health. I was asked to go into detention centers and to prisons. And
wow.
and now I work with people all over the country virtually. And it's like, I had no idea that as I walked through that and the things that I learned about myself would change me to be a person that could see the world in a way where I can support others through these hard experiences.
How profound, but how proud I am of you to recognize that. There's a lot of people that would still be a victim, Portia. There's a lot of people that would not have learned the way you learned. So you need to also give yourself some credence for that, because that's amazing what you did for yourself and your family, to be honest with you.
Well, I appreciate that. I remember being in prison and feeling so brokenhearted about the yeah. pain I had caused my children. And it came to me one day, it's like the only thing you can do is get yourself healthy. That's the most powerful thing you can do for your children, is to face yourself. And I feel proud
yes.
that I taught my children that when you make a mistake, you own it and you move forward. I'm grateful that I have been able to give them that lesson.
Right. Oh, no, absolutely. And, you know, if nothing else, how proud they are of you. I know at the time they were like, oh, my mom's in prison and blah, blah, blah. Whatever they, you know, I'm sure they got made fun of. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
But you know what? It doesn't matter. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter what people think of you. It's what you think of yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh, you just hit something that's so important, because yes. prior to prison, I was so worried about what everyone thought of me. And yes. in a way, prison was death and freedom, because who cares now? Okay.
Right.
I went to prison, so now I do not care. And so, and there is so much freedom in that. And then I realized, as I started to work on my own integrity, by the end of my prison sentence, I thought, I really like myself.
Yes.
And that's all I care about. I don't need anyone else to like me. Like, I look in the mirror and I like me. I feel good about me. And that is where our self-esteem comes from, not
it
what
is.
People think of us.
Do you think it's fair to say that prison freed you?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, I do too. Girl, this is amazing. I may have to have you back on, because I know you have to go, and that's why I'm going to cut this short. So tell me about your books, where people can find them. Tell me if there's anything, if somebody wants coaching from you, how they can find you, all of those things.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, who knew that I would end up writing these books? I had no idea. So I came home, I started working in drug treatment, and I was working night shifts, and the girls in the treatment center loved my prison stories. They were like, oh, Portia, tell us a prison story, you know? So I started writing them down, and they were my readers. And then I would send it in to my friends that were still in prison and say, what do you guys think? We love it. You got to tell this story and that
yes.
story. And so I finished that, which was mind blowing. I'm like, I wrote an outline. I finished it. And then I found editors, and I self-published on Amazon
yep.
for a couple reasons. I had other options, but it was one of the reasons was that I wanted to make my book available in prisons across the country. They have
you.
Tablets.
Good
so
you.
That's available for free in prisons. And you
wow.
can't do that if you have certain contracts. And so
right.
it's available on Amazon and Audible. I read it on Audible. And
nice.
Then Last year, I wrote another book, and that one is also, you just, you know, the crazy thing is there's only one Portia Lauder. I haven't been able to find another one. So if someone Googles me, they will find me. And with coaching, that's a really good question. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on every platform. So if someone reaches out and they need support, please do. I will do anything I can to help. And yeah. That's what I do.
Well, I've written several books myself, paranormal romance novels. I did that before I did the podcasting. So I understand, and getting it, you know, being your own self-publisher, you make more of the money. Don't let everybody else have your money. You do your own thing. Yeah.
And you own your, you know, I don't have to ask permission to talk about it, to publish it. I can put it in magazines. So there are some real benefits to being your own publisher for sure.
Portia, you have been amazing. I love hearing your stories. You're a good storyteller, so I know why people loved you there too, in prison, hearing your stories. I know now why you're an author. So thank you again for being on the podcast. Like I said, let's have you back and we can have a longer conversation about it.
Sounds great. Thanks so much.
Well, I love providing because I want to know at no cost. So if you like what you heard, please leave me a 5-star review, or you can just buy me a cup of coffee. It's kind of like a Patreon, but you don't have a monthly subscription and you can give whatever you feel led to give. I am a one-woman show and I do all of my scheduling and my interviewing and my editing. So just know your support is so greatly appreciated. And one more thing, I am a paranormal romance novelist and you can find all of my books on Amazon. Just look up my name. I'm very easy to find. Thank you guys again, and I will see you next week.